Welcome to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. It is I, Becky Friedman, hosting today with Meredith. How are you?
Hi, Becky. I'm okay.
And Josh in the studio as well. How are you, Josh?
I'm abiding.
Abiding, much like the dude. Now, are you guys, do you consider yourselves good people?
I don't even know. Yes.
Josh, yes. Do you consider yourself a good person?
I'm kind of on the fence about that.
Kind of on the fence about whether to be good or about whether you are good.
Everything's perspective, so.
Well, if you, had something in the state capitol grounds that could tell you how to be a good person, do you think that it would change your life? Do you think it would change your comportment?
Like, I think I know where you're going with this.
I mean, I know that we've got RCW, our Revised Code of Washington. I know we have our state constitution and everything. I know we have got our secular case law.
Do we need something that's like a big tablet that maybe has a list of some rules that someone wants us to follow?
Does this tablet cover slavery or rape?
No, actually, it doesn't say anything about...
What about murder?
Murder kind of, okay. A little bit there, yeah.
Seems to be a little lacking.
Okay, well, it's a good thing we're not in Arkansas, where three organizations have filed suit against the state of Arkansas, seeking the removal of a Ten Commandments monument from the Capitol building grounds. Arkansas's ACLU, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and the American Humanist Association contend that the monument unconstitutionally governs the religious duties of believers, instructs its citizens which god to worship, forbids its citizens from using a particular deity's name in vain, and requires Sabbath observances for religious purposes. I mean, that's kind of what the Ten Commandments are all about, right?
Yeah.
Apart from several atheist and agnostic plaintiffs, a Jewish rabbi and a United Methodist minister are included as plaintiffs as well. The current 3-ton, 6-foot-tall Ten Commandments monument was installed earlier this spring to replace the one destroyed last year by a vandal exhibiting mental instability only 24 hours after it had been erected. Private individuals, churches, and a Christian film company paid for the replacement.
3 tons, huh? Is this so that way they're trying to make it less liable to be taken out by a car?
Yeah, so the guy, we covered this last year, I think.
Vaguely remember this.
He decided to ram his car at like 15 miles an hour into the Decalogue, right?
Right.
And I believe that he actually captured some video as well. It was kind of alarming, right?
Like, yeah.
Kids, no distracted driving and no vandalistic driving either.
Definitely don't video yourself vandalizing things.
And Josh, you kind of revisited this, right, to refresh our memory. Can you refresh our memory a little bit about this guy?
Yeah, so...
Well, I mean, was this like an angry atheist guy that said that it shouldn't be there?
No.
Didn't want to take the lawsuit route?
Absolutely not. He actually, Michael Tate Reed, 32, of Van Buren, Arkansas, is a Christian, but is a strong proponent of state and separation of church and state.
Interesting. You know, it's oftentimes portrayed in media, especially, Christian media organizations, that it's always the evil atheists that are trying to rain on their parade.
But not in this case. This man was not an atheist.
Trying to ram a car into your parade. So that man's not an atheist. And then the thing that grabbed my attention here was you've got three different organizations all suing to remove the monument. One organization's representing a Jewish rabbi and the other a Methodist minister. Like you said, that strong proponent of separation of church and state. You know, even though... You know, you yourself might be religious or Christian or someone who abides by the Ten Commandments even, you know, you might not want that portrayed. You might not want your religion essentialized through government means.
Yeah,
so it's
above all others.
Well, yeah.
Especially considering that the Ten Commandments that they're posting is not the same Ten Commandments that like a Catholic would.
Yeah, the Ten Commandments.
Different Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
They appear differently in different parts of the Bible. And
depending on how they're translated as well.
Exactly. Whether you should not lie or merely just not bear false witness, right? You can lie all you want to, you know, your family members or friends, but if you're in a court, maybe don't bear false witness. Like there's some little sticky issues there, right? So I guess the Jewish plaintiff is suing that the Ten Commandments in government trivializes his religion and also leaves out the 603 other commandments in the Bible, because there's 613 in the Hebrew scriptures. Well, there's only 10 of them.
Yeah, they're all equally important.
So, yeah, exactly. I mean, according to some observant individuals. But like you said, I'll call back to what you said earlier, Josh. You know, Ten Commandments doesn't say that, you know, slavery is wrong. Like, if you want to say what's the most important thing, you know, to if you're going to whittle it all down to 10 ways to 10 things to remember to be a good person, to rule your life, like, you might want to say, hey, let's not own people. You might want to say, let's, you know, honor the dignity of each individual, you know, regardless of color or national origin or our protected classes through secular law here in the United States.
They even get thou shalt not kill wrong, because a lot of Christians will squirm out of that, saying it's actually meant to be murder. And so they're fine with you killing in war or justified killing, but as long as it's not straight up murder.
Well, I mean,
wiggle.
My natal religion of Judaism, we're really fond on finding all of those loopholes. Not only for the, hey, this is a thing that says, you know, do not kill. Well, I'm going to find some little loopholes and workarounds. There is some wiggle room in that. But also the kind of outdated, nasty commandments, the ones where you have to stone a rebellious child. You know, the Jewish sages and scholars worked really hard to try and say, well, it has to be witnessed by this many people, and it has to be the actual rebellion itself has to have been witnessed by this many people, and they put so many stipulations on it that it's impossible to carry out. Because at the base of it, I'll say something that Sam has said on Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey since day one: people are better than their books. I mean, you look at a book like the Hebrew Scriptures, at least that I'm familiar with. There, it instructs you to do some really nasty things, some really terrible things. You look at the Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, which is, you know, the reason that the Ten Commandments even went up in Arkansas was because some lawmaker in 2015 said this is part of our national heritage and has influenced our laws. Well, yeah, I mean, just those 10 ones influenced our laws. I think that we're done with that kind of influence, and we want to add the laws like, you know, abolishing slavery, maybe,
and protecting people's rights.
So, I don't know what there is to celebrate by having, you know, that 3-ton monolith there. I don't know how this one will go, because there's conflicting case law about it. I mean, it's in the states in the federal Supreme Court. You have the Ten Commandments, but for something that's so new, like from only 2015, the law came into being, I don't know why they feel like this is part of their heritage and tradition when it's a new installation.
So I want to push back on the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Because it's the context of the Ten Commandments in the Supreme Court is it's amongst other religious. It's not just specifically the Ten Commandments. There's also everything else that surrounds it. It actually conforms to the multiculturalism.
So you're right in this case when we've got this, like you said, the standard of it's not promoting just one particular religion or religiosity over irreligion, but it's in the context of what founds our country in the context of all the other things that found our country.
Yeah, not a singular source.
You have Thomas Paine, who, was one of our founders, who by most standards was an atheist. You had Thomas Jefferson, who wasn't an atheist, but pulled out all the parts of the Bible that he didn't like, creating the Thomas Jefferson Bible. Have you guys ever looked at the Thomas Jefferson Bible?
No, I've always heard about it, but it doesn't really interest me. I mean, the book, if you take the magic out of the book, it's got to be really, really boring.
It's kind of like some Hallmark greeting cards, you know?
Right.
It's got the nice little... It's got the nice parts of it that sort of sound like Hallmark greeting cards and stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean, people really do gravitate to deepities, as Daniel Dennett would call them.
Oh yes, what is deep? What is those nice things that make us feel good, that we say, hey, there's something bigger than us? Certainly not the ones that says how you should pierce your slave's ear, right? Let's leave that one out of the case, right? When you read a lot of the Bible, it is really drawl. I mean, there's a lot
It's really specific.
It gets into like super detail, right? Now you grew up in a Christian school,
right? Yeah.
Were you made to read the Bible?
Oh yeah.
And did you guys focus on the sort of like the Genesis Exodus stories, or because there's a lot more than just what gets in the Illustrated Kids Bible stories?
No, I mean, like, I went to a Christian high school, so at that point we were like deep diving into the scriptures to figure out what they mean. But
there's a lot of begats, you know, over and over, and there's a lot of repetition.
All of the lineages, it's so pretty boring.
So maybe the way that we should live our lives is by keeping track of our genealogies. I don't know.
I don't think that's going to do it.
So, well, from one religious erection to a different one, we've got in Iceland the neo-pagans. This one's actually real fun, right? So instead of building a Ten Commandments, what are they building? The Icelandic leader of a neo-pagan faith based on Sumerian mythology has applied for permission to build a two-story ziggurat to serve as the temple for the congregation. August Arnar Augustsson formed Zuism in 2016 and attracted nearly 3,000 applicants on the promise of having their National Church of Iceland parish fees refunded. While 80% of Icelanders are officially registered with the National Church, 20% profess agnostic beliefs, and more than a quarter express atheistic beliefs that no gods exist. Zuist adherents claim that their belief system is the world's oldest, centering on the Sumerian pantheon that includes An, Enki, and Marduk. Augustsson states that they need a congregation for their widely lauded events such as, get this guys, beer and prayer. The temple will also serve as a place for ceremonies such as baby namings and weddings.
Beer and prayer sounds great.
I know.
Sorry.
Does beer and prayer not sound dissimilar to what we do after we record the podcast every day?
Yeah.
Every weekend.
Every single time that we're done with producing our show, we have a little post-show gathering. Yeah, that actually, minus the prayer thing, that's kind of what we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So I guess instead of just, you know, patronizing a local pub, then we would, hey, guys, what do you think that Tacoma, city of Tacoma, would approve our own
ziggurat?
Yes.
I just wanted to say ziggurat.
I know. It's amazing. It's do you guys know what the shape of a ziggurat is? It's like...
Yeah, it's like a square...
It's a flattened pyramid,
kind of.
Yeah, it's like a square pyramid that looks really pixelated.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's got the little
steps.
It looks
like it should come from Minecraft.
Yes. Yes. So I think that, you know, I mean, sitting there by the glass museum.
Oh,
cone.
Yeah. Right down on Dock Street. That'd be a perfect spot for a ziggurat.
Yep. We've got the Tacoma Dome. We've got the cone from the glass museum hot shop. We've got the bridge. And I think that it would really add, a ziggurat would really add to the landscape, to the cityscape of Tacoma.
I know. It would be a good addition.
But I don't think that we could get our church fees reduced.
We don't have church fees.
Oh, right. We don't have church fees in the United States. Not yet. Because, hey, we've got that whole separation of church and state here.
Still, for the time being.
For the time being. So are you guys aware of this kind of like church parish fees? It happens in a lot of European countries.
I actually wasn't aware of that at all.
Germany, I heard, was actually known for this. It was mandatory if you ever... It went to a church, you had to pay taxes, and you almost couldn't get out of them ever.
So it's sort of like those, it's like a tax, and it's for the state to support a particular religion, but if you're not part of that main religion, your tax fees, either your parish fees, either get refunded back to you under the impression that you're going to give it to your own church, or they get reassigned and redistributed to the church based on the census. And in Iceland's case, with like 3,000 people in the Zuist religion or Zuism, this is not like Zoo. This is not, you know, animal life.
Z-U.
Yes, this is the
I-S-M.
Z-U-I-S-M. They're like 1% of Iceland's population. So theoretically, you know, you could have your church fees refunded, or if they just wanted to take all of the parish fees and then distribute 1% of those to the ziggurat building, then that would be cool. It is one of the things I'm glad that we don't have in the United States. You can't collect taxes and fees to go to churches, to go to, religious institutions, except if they build a playground, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So we have talked about on the show that there was a church that wanted to resurface their playground, and they said, well, the playground can be used by anyone, and so therefore it's secular, so we should be able to get a state grant for this. They said, oh, yeah, okay. So we're seeing more and more often, you know, faith-based groups and organizations applying for, being granted, and utilizing tax dollars, you know, public funds, in order to support particular works. Now, some of those works can be secular in nature, secular in purpose, but I don't know if you guys have ever benefited from any kind of charity that was given by a religious organization. You can say, we're not going to pray. You can step into a church for a meal or for a clothing bank. You can say, we're not going to pray. But hey, all that stuff is still up on the walls, right? All those posters are still there. If you know, buy anything there, then, you know, church gift shop, coffee shop. A lot of churches have coffee shops now. Have you guys noticed this thing?
Is that just a Pacific Northwest thing because we're a home of Starbucks?
Oh, I don't know. Hey, listeners out of Washington State, please tell us if your church has restaurant, a coffee shop. Hey, even better, tell us if you've got a place for beer and prayer in your church. And hopefully it is not supported by the government. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC. We'll be back after the break. Hello and welcome back to Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey. It's still me, Becky, along with Josh and Meredith in the studio. How are you guys?
Still good.
Still good. Now, we've got some feedback from our listeners. Actually, a listener very far away. This is from Angel from Podcast Ateorizar. He says, hola, soy Angel del Podcast Ateorizar. Solo quería hacer una aclaración sobre a secas. En España al menos significa sin más, sin nada añadido. Sánchez quería decir que es simplemente ateo, nada más. No es ateo militante, ni ateo a ultranza, ni ningún otro calificativo. La expresión to the bone aquí sería hasta la médula, que traducieron literalmente es to the marrow, más adentro todavía que hasta el hueso. No pierdo ningún programa. Un abrazo enorme. Well, thanks, Angel. Angel speaks Spanish, and he is from Podcast Ateorizar. It is a group of individuals who are Spanish-speaking that really talk about atheist issues in lots of different Spanish-speaking countries, including the United States. So what's kind of up there? But he has a correction for me. I kind of interpreted some things a little bit wonky last week. He says, it's Angel from Podcast Ateorizar. I only wanted to make a clarification about the expression a secas. In Spain, at least, it means without anything more, without anything added. Sanchez wanted to say that he's simply atheist, no more. He's not a militant atheist, not an uncompromising atheist, nor by any qualification. The expression to the bone here would be hasta la médula, which translated literally is to the marrow, even further inside than the bone. I never miss a show. Giant hug. So, Sanchez, about it last week.
Last week we were talking about Pedro Sanchez, the Prime Minister of Spain, is an atheist, and he called himself atheist. I'm not a Spanish speaker, so apologies in advance. A secas.
There you go. Yep.
Which is atheist. We thought what meant atheist to the dry, like you bleed yourself dry to the bone.
Yeah. But apparently it's just
I'm just an atheist. That's it. Which really truly fits in with the definition of atheist is no God.
Yeah.
That's just all he believes. No God. That's it.
Yep.
Okay.
No more additional things. That is. Yeah. Atheist, right? Yeah. A without or no, absence of, and so absence of any other frills and bells and whistles and anything like that. I like it. I like it because it's not something that's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's just, no, I'm simply an atheist. Like, I'm not trying to be militant, not uncompromising. I'm not, no, I just want to serve my country, right? So we wish Pedro Sanchez best of luck serving España. We've also got another email from, this time, locally, and this is from Tony from Tacoma, and she writes, what's up with government-sanctioned monogamy anyway? Couldn't that be interpreted as blurring the line between church and state? Josh, Meredith?
I think there's some old-school Mormons that might agree with this.
Ah, okay.
That's something I've never really thought of before.
That when you have monogamy, sort mm-hmm. of the marriage license and the institution of marriage being endorsed by the state, is that religion? Well, I mean, I don't know, because I'm an atheist and I happen to be monogamous. It's something that I don't, begrudge anyone else for if they want something different for how they want to arrange their families and their lives. But mine is just with one partner, right? That's how I choose to spend my life. So if that's my life, if they were saying, if the government was, endorsing monogamy, is that saying atheism, perhaps? I don't know. It just seems like monogamy, yes, has been institutionalized by religion, but religion doesn't have a stranglehold on monogamy. There's other cultures where monogamous partnerships without the influence of religion tend to happen. There's religious people where plural partnerships happen. So I'm not sure. I mean,
I don't know. It seems like in America, though, specifically, a lot of people throughout history have used their religion to force their monogamy on people.
Yeah.
And for specific religious purposes.
Well, when you have the old school Mormons that, had to essentially give up polygamy in order to be accepted into the United States and in order for Utah to be no longer a territory, but a state, they had to change their religion. I don't think that was so much, being against Mormonism as it was upholding the Protestant ethic of monogamy. So in that case, I would definitely say that, yeah, that is a state sponsored, enforcement of a religious ideal specific to American Protestantism at that time. But I don't know.
I mean, I think maybe our current institution of marriage is held over from that as well. I don't necessarily think I'm ever going to get married again because I don't.
There are a lot of atheists and even religious individuals that I have heard talk about, all the business between letting folks get married or not get married. Why don't we just do away with the institution of marriage altogether?
Yeah, I'm kind of.
Let's just let everybody have it on their own. Get rid of the tax benefits. Everybody should get. Nobody should be paying more taxes just because they're single or because they're in a committed relationship that they just didn't put on paper.
So in terms of being able to live your life with as equal an opportunity as the next person, whether you decide to partner yourself in a certain way really shouldn't factor into it. Is that what I'm hearing from you guys?
Yeah, I would say that's a...
Well, it's all interesting perspectives. And if you want to tweet at us, we're at AskAnAtheistWA. You can send questions to questions@atheist.radio or give us a voicemail. It's 844-SKEPTIC. We'd love to hear your perspective on this, whether you're a religious individual or an atheist. Do you think that monogamy is government sanctioning of a religious ideal? Do you think that blurs the line between church and state, that wall that Thomas Jefferson really talked about, upholding? Does monogamy, do the tax benefits put you as an atheist or as a non-monogamous religious person at a disadvantage? Is that religious discrimination? Kind of really interesting, provocative question. So thanks, Tony, and thanks, Angel. I'd like to go now, guys, to, all the way to Germany. So we talked a little bit, you referenced the parish taxes. This has nothing to do with the parish taxes. It does have to do with, that blurry line between church and state. Because German Bavarian Premier Markus Söder has ordered that crosses be hung in all public buildings. Söder claims that the action does not violate the state's neutrality towards religion, since he believes the crucifixes are merely an avowal of Bavarian identity in the largely Catholic southern German region. The new law is being seen by many, including clergy, to be a ploy to siphon voters towards Söder from the far-right Alternative for Germany party, which campaigns on limiting Islamization of German culture in the wake of Germany accepting more than 1 million largely Muslim immigrants and refugees since 2015. Sutter's Christian Social Union Party faces state elections in October.
So I'm all for going up against the far right Alternative Party, but this might not, I don't think this is a very good way to actually.
No, he's trying to draw far right people to him.
Yeah, he's trying to siphon off.
He's trying to pull these Islamophobes voters to his party to make them vote for him by saying, hey, look, we're going to put crosses because it's not religious. It's
a cultural symbol.
Culture.
Right.
Well, I don't know if he's...
It's not offensive towards Muslims at all.
So this is a far right infighting to try and draw.
It's the conservative moderate, or who calls himself moderate. It's the conservative Christian, you know, party saying we're going to go up against the even more wacky radical Christian party. You know, the folks from my reading and understanding in that Alternative for Germany. Yeah, they are far right. But do we really want the folks going up against them to be, you know, settling? Do we want to have to settle for something that's just moderately, overbearingly Christian as opposed to hostile to Muslim individuals? I am not liking the taste of this, guys.
Me neither.
Absolutely not.
So when you've got those crosses in public buildings, it's not just your government halls. You know where else it is?
Schools.
It's in schools, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's saying, what is the culture of Bavaria? It's saying it's the one where having a cross is our culture. Where does the cross come from? It's Christianity. And, you know, in this case, I just think that it's so short-sighted to say, hey, we're going to try and fight against this thing politically by invoking something that's supposed to be cultural or, to individual Catholics, a sacred object, right? And there have been clergy that have said, stop trivializing this for your own political gains. I mean, he's in this losing party. You know, on one hand, yeah, I do hope that he does siphon off voters from the radical anti-Islamic, you know, party. But at the same time, do we really want this to be the way that he goes about doing it? Do you guys see that there's anything like that could happen in the United States? Do you think?
You mean like Florida?
Like, or like the Ten Commandments. It's merely cultural. It's merely part of our heritage.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And like in Florida, they're going to put In God We Trust in all the schools.
Oh, well, they've already done that in Tennessee or Arkansas and things like that. Yeah, it's our official motto, but do we need to blast it everywhere, right? Under red, white, and blue.
Yeah, no, we don't. But we're going to anyway, because...
So, interesting tidbit about this guy. So, the German Bavarian minister, his predecessor is now the Minister of the Interior. And as soon as he got to the Minister of the Interior of the country, he renamed it. I believe it's called Heimat. It's similar to a Yiddish word. It's a German word, and it's a similar word in Yiddish to Hamish. And it's like, we don't really have an English word for this. It's kind of like homishness. It's like a sense of belonging, a sense of identity, a sense of familial relation. So you go from the Ministry of the Interior to basically the Ministry of what is and what is not homeland. Right? What is and what is not belonging? And this guy in the Minister of the Heimat has said Islam is not a part of Germany, even though 1 million migrants and refugees have made their home, be it temporary or not, in your country. You got to wake up. You got to say, hey, is this just cultural?
It's obviously not.
what do you want your culture to be, sir?
And not to mention that they've had this issue 70 years ago with Jews.
Yeah, I mean, you could say, you think that you might have learned from something here.
You would think.
And it's worrying. But for every worrying event, don't worry, because there's a spunky atheist ready to troll you. A London-based artist traveling in Germany concocted an artistic and irreverent way to counter the Bavarian law mandating that crosses be hung in all state buildings. Darren Cullen sent dozens of wooden crucifixes with the hanging hook along the bottom edge to state officials, along with illustrated instructions diagramming how to hang them upside down. Cullen mused that recipients shouldn't be offended, since, according to Bavarian Premier Markus Söder, the cross isn't a religious symbol. The project was funded by private individuals and the Satanic Temple, London and UK.
This is some good trolling.
I know, A+ trolling. Good job, Darren.
Hope somebody takes him up on it, but... A lot of the idea of what the upside down cross means is really just a kind of like a pop culture kind of thing.
Now, I wasn't really steeped in Catholicism at all, but I know that crosses, you know, I'm culturally literate enough to know that there's some use of different crosses. I know the St. Andrew's cross is the big X, right? Mm-hmm. That's for Scotland. St. Catherine died on a wheel, so sometimes you got wheels of mm-hmm. Catherine. But whose is the upside down cross? Isn't that something that
St. Peter
was actually turned upside down?
Correct. He was crucified upside down.
Okay,
as the story goes, and so it's St. Peter's cross is the upside down cross. Now, thanks to our pop culture, we believe that it's a satanic symbol, but really it's just a St. Peter's cross.
Okay. So all the little doodles on my school desks at work from little ninth graders that are bored and the teaching
and think they're being all hardcore, like, I'm going to draw an upside down cross on your desk.
I do. I get lots of upside down crosses in between foreheads on little doodled caricatures and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. You even drew my glasses.
Wow.
Yeah, I'll take upside down crosses over swastikas because we get those too. That takes a little bit more work. We got to turn them into windows, and then we see like little windows. Yeah, kids, stop doodling any crosses or swastikas on your school desks.
Probably just don't vandalize your school desks anyway.
You know what? I bet all of those crosses hanging up in the Bavarian schools will really make a difference in what the German kids doodle on their desks. I think
their
that it
will be right side up.
Yeah, their crosses are going to be right side up, especially if the one hanging on the wall is from Mr. Cullen, from Darren Cullen, right? Hanging upside down. Did you guys see the illustrations that he included in this?
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
It's like a how to apply. It looks like the insert from, from like a box of tampons or from an airplane of how to apply your face mask.
Yeah, right? I was thinking like it looks like one of those fold-out airplane instruction manuals like before hanging your cross to the wall, position the nail here, and
it's great.
It just goes in depth on it. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's good work. It's good illustrative joking, and I like these kinds of things. And now we should say that, of course, Satanic Temple started in the United States, but I didn't know that they existed in the UK.
I didn't know either.
And I guess being closer to Bavaria, they took on that project. So well done, Mr. Cullen and Satanic Temple, London, UK. So let's see. We've got some Trump news, guys.
Oh, no.
But I'm not going to talk about anything that Trump has or hasn't done. Because I don't know, by the time this goes to air, we could be at war with Canada. We could be
Canada.
We could be kicked out of any number of groups, whether they're G7s or G12s or, you know, I mean, we've already self-removed from Paris and from G7 and things like that. But you know what? There's some people that really, regardless of what Donald Trump does, still believe that he was selected by God to be leader of the United States. Liberty University has teamed up with a Christian movie production company, RealWorks, to produce a film that suggests that Donald Trump was selected by God to be president. The Trump Prophecies is based on the 2011 visions of firefighter Mark Taylor, who claims that he began to hear the voices of God and evil spirits as he suffered from anxiety and depression. Taylor, who is depicted in the film by a Liberty University theater professor, purports to be a true prophet, having been given advance knowledge that Trump would be elected president. Students who were utilized in production and filming are fighting back against the movie, inspiring 1,500 student and alumni signatures on a petition critical of the film, and prompting graduates to send back their diplomas. Trump Prophecies director and head of Liberty's cinematic arts program, Stephen Schulze, claimed that his main goal was simply to give students opportunities to learn filmmaking skills, not to raise up Trump.
Not to raise up Trump. That's hilarious. I mean, I feel bad because the students got, I mean, their grades depended on making this propaganda piece.
I'm glad you used the word propaganda. It really is a propaganda piece. If you go and you look at the previews to it, there's all the shiny gold things. And to say we're just asking the question of, we're exploring whether his random visions might be true or not. Is this really a prophet? We may never know. It's obviously a propaganda piece, and it's really disingenuous, like you said, to take advantage of the students in order to do this.
Yeah, I think they absolutely have every right to fight back because they didn't have a choice if this was like what they had to work on to get their grade.
Yeah, and not to mention, this is probably gonna make some good money, just because it's that kind of not really good like Hollywood money, but it's gonna still make this guy money because he there's a market for this kind of material.
Yeah, because it's somebody else asking, is God, or did God ordain Trump to the presidency?
Ooh, ordain, yeah. Forget that swearing in of oath in the Electoral College. He was ordained.
He just ordained him.
He's on a mission from Gad.
Well, and the other thing here is, you know, you say, yeah, there's a market for it. It's kind of strange that as we in the United States have gotten less and less religious, less and less religiously adherent, we have people who in vast numbers, especially millennials and under, who either do not attend church regularly or do not profess to have a belief in God. We have since 2012 doubled the number of explicitly Christian films that are in main distribution, like in movie theaters. It's not just the God's Not Dead stuff. And whenever you have any of these kinds of movies and these films that are selling out theaters, it's large churches and youth groups that are renting them out.
Yep.
And then having
that.
Oh, you've done this.
Yeah. I saw Passion of the Christ in a rented out theater.
Oh, that was do you think the Passion of the Christ really was the beginning of the, you know, sort of like big religious hits?
That's from my perspective. Yeah.
As like a blockbuster. Yeah, that was
as
definitely
a blockbuster movie.
So tell us a little bit. You went to...
Oh, yeah. That just the church rented out an entire theater movie. Not the whole movie theater, but one screen in the theater. And we all just showed up and watched the movie and cried and prayed together.
Oh, okay. So we went in Hebrew school to go see Prince of Egypt because we were super excited that there was a animated thing that was, you know, I mean, this is in the era of Aladdin,
right,
and Pocahontas, and you know, it's like it looks similar to it, and we got DreamWorks, and oh, there's Prince of Egypt, and it's actually depicting our people, or the who we thought were our people, right? I mean, and we were very excited. We didn't cry and pray though.
Well, Prince of Egypt has a little bit different tone.
Really? No,
Passion of the Christ.
I actually
have not seen it.
I have not subjected myself to watching Passion of the Christ.
Oh, I mean, I guess it's pretty.
It's torture porn.
It's torture porn. It's really graphic, and at the time, people loved seeing that, which is weird. They would, the whole theater is sitting there watching the Son of God being beaten to death, while, like, I don't know.
And it's like a 2-hour long film, isn't it? It's a major feature. And there's no singing even. I mean, Prince of Egypt has songs.
No, it's not a musical.
No.
Maybe that would have helped make it better.
So on one hand, I can't wait until God Awful Movies tears us apart, because that's coming.
Okay.
And then on the second part of that, though, there is a Passion of the Christ 2 coming out.
Oh, is it made by unwilling film students?
No, it's going to be Mel Gibson.
What is there next?
Directing and... That's, I don't know, but Jim Caviezel is reprising his role as Jesus.
Okay.
After the, so apparently this is after the resurrection.
He's not 33 anymore. I mean, the actor.
Yeah, that was a while ago.
Speaking of actors, back to this Trump prophecy thing. Some media outlets actually call this a documentary, right? Because apparently they're exploring the visions of this firefighter.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you have the firefighter that's being played by a theater professor. Is this a documentary? Are there reenactments
like
in it?
Dramatization?
Biopic? Of somebody that doesn't matter?
Yeah. And I, you know, at the core of it, I really do feel for this firefighter. I mean, firefighting can expose you to lots of different kinds of, you know, traumatic events and things like that, not just related to fire, but most of what firefighters do is helping people that are in medical distress, responding to accidents and things like that. So it's no wonder that he would suffer from anxiety and depression. But at the same time, when you start to say, I'm suffering from anxiety and depression, and I'm hearing voices, I'm going to interpret them as God, or conversely, evil spirits. That's exceedingly worrying to me.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, to what extent do we know whether this is firefighter Mr. Taylor's, you know, upbringing that normalizes these things, and he interprets these as word of God or word of evil spirits? Is this him cashing in on something? Is this religion excusing and normalizing a mental disturbance. I mean, it's very worrying to me.
I'm aiming more towards door number two. He's cashing in.
Okay, you're hoping for the cashing in.
I'm not hoping for it. I just think that's what it is. It's just he happened to be right in 2011 about Trump becoming president.
Well, he's also made some other predictions, though, that haven't come true.
Yet.
Like Obama being tried for treason and Trump releasing the cures for Alzheimer's and cancer.
Oh, wow.
So when those come true, maybe he'll be a prophet.
Maybe. We can only hope. I don't know. This is Ask an Atheist. We'll be back after the break.
Has Ngadwe Trust invaded your town? Are you tired of government officials who want to plaster Ngadwe Trust on taxpayer-owned property? Are you afraid because your local sheriff placed an In God We Trust decal on the patrol cars? We are here to help. The original motto project is for those who feel the separation of church and state is an important issue and should be honored regardless of your belief or lack thereof. Theists, non-theists, and all free thinkers are welcome. We need your support to show politicians that diversity exists within our nation, and their promotion of a monotheistic religion and push for theocracy will not be tolerated. Stand up and be heard. Join us at originalmotto.us.
And welcome back to Ask an Atheist. I'm Ask an Atheist.
With Happy Sunday.
Today it's me, Becky Friedman, with Josh and Meredith. You just heard the original motto project, that little PSA. And the founder of the original motto project is Robert Ray. He's a friend of the show. He has been a humanist celebrant in Washington State for a good long time, and he and his family have made their final move out of state. And as his little ones have now graduated high school, we wish Robert and his whole family well. So thank you, Robert, for all your contributions to humanism in Washington State, and certainly to the original motto project. So that, you know, maybe we can have things that say, like, e pluribus unum, you know, from the many one. We can have some inspirational quotes that maybe aren't grounded in religion, maybe don't have any place in any commandments here
or
there.
That are actual cultural things and not religious.
Right. So we thank you for your service and contributions to Washington. He's not moving to Canada, though, which is where our next story comes from, guys. So, up in Canada, a Supreme Court judge in British Columbia has ruled against a fanatical Christian couple who sued the government on grounds of religious persecution after authorities placed their infant daughter in foster care. During the appeal, the couple insisted on acting as their own attorneys, spoke in tongues, and claimed God spoke to them through a plush lion toy they brought to the courtroom. The unnamed parents initially had their child removed from their custody after the mother revealed her husband's potential for violent beatings and involuntary restraint, as well as his religious belief that sexual relations between children and adults was permissible. The parents also refused all medical care for their daughter, including vaccinations, eye drops, bilirubin blood tests, and a hearing test. The couple had previously been arrested for public disturbance as they attempted to ritually cleanse local churches of demonic influences. The most recent ruling indefinitely postpones the mother's application to rename the baby Jesus Joy of the Lord.
Also on that application, she was going to change her name too.
Wait, what? She was going to change. She wanted to change her name?
Her name as well.
So we don't actually have the name of the couple or the child, because if we know the names of the couple, it you know, violates the privacy of the child. So is she Mrs. Joy of the Lord?
No, she was going to change her name to Risen Lord Jesus Refines Fire Christ.
That's a lot of syllables. That's like
Risen
six
Lord
different
Jesus Refines Fire Christ.
That's,
it kind of rolls off the tongue. Risen Lord Jesus Refines Fire Christ.
So Mrs. Refines Fire Christ actually was can be lauded to some degree, because when she revealed that her husband had this very, very extreme, you know, religiously motivated tendency to beat and tie her up. You know, she revealed this, and it actually resulted in the removal of the child for the protection of the child. But it just got weirder and weirder and worse because she's staying with her husband and she wants to have her child back. And she claims that she's been religiously persecuted because they won't let them change their name to something weird. They won't let them go and cleanse the churches of demons. I mean, you can't just walk onto someone's private property and trying to, I mean, can you imagine?
Well, and when they tried to take them away from one of these church cleansings, the woman apparently refused to leave and was like flailing on the ground, rolling around on the ground. That's where their legal troubles began.
It sounds like you're really fit to raise an infant then in that case.
Yes.
There are so many red flags in the story. Plush lion toy. So apparently they've seen The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe a little bit too many times and took it too seriously.
Well, hey, lions are symbols of God and Jesus.
The Lion of Judah.
Yeah, and then Lion of Judah. A lot of, you know, Jewish symbols have, you know, two lions, you know, and holding them. Daniel in the lion's den. Lions are a big biblical thing, but I've never really heard of...
A plush lion toy.
This is a stuffed animal. This is a stuffed animal who's acting as your lawyer in court when you're trying to get your child back.
And they also claimed that Jesus was speaking through them while they were interviewing the witnesses.
Oh, because they were acting as their own lawyers?
Yeah.
Or was it Jesus?
They were acting as their own lawyers, and also Jesus was speaking through them, which is why they kept speaking in tongues, because that was Jesus.
Okay. All right.
So Jesus doesn't speak English.
Well, no, he speaks Aramaic. Didn't you see The Passion of Christ? I haven't even seen it, and I know that. it's a very alarming and sad situation that I see here. But some of the interesting things is that the ruling specifically says this isn't a ruling against being religious. This isn't a ruling against home birth because they had their baby at home. They actually had their baby at home and then called paramedics and a paramedic helped deliver the baby, but then they refused to take the baby to the hospital or anything like that.
Yeah.
The judge says it's not a ruling against raising your child with religious values, and even actually said it's clear that they really, you know, love their child and want to raise her within their Christian values. But when your Christian values include beating and restraining your spouse, and you come from a cult, because the father did come from a cult that was even more extreme than his current practice, apparently, where you believe that sexual relations with children is permissible on a religious basis, that's not a ruling against religion or Christian values. This is a ruling against your weird interpretation and execution of those Christian values. And for the safety of this child, it was absolutely the right thing. I don't understand how you can, if you walked into a courtroom or if you were a reporter or if you were, you know, opposing counsel or something like that, and your client or one of the clients had a stuffed animal that was representing them as their legal counsel. I don't care if Jesus or demons are speaking through it. I think that
I would be a little more worried that it's something not all religious.
I'm surprised, yeah, right? That they were even found competent to represent themselves in trial.
To stand trial, yeah.
I wonder if in the United States it would be... I wonder if in the United States anyone has ever represented themselves through a stuffed animal. That would be an interesting little digging.
To the Googles, listeners.
So, we've got one child that's now protected up in British Columbia that has been removed and is on their way, paving the way towards adoption through the fostering system within British Columbia, within Canada, but closer to home, actually throughout the whole United States. Researchers from Portland State and the University of Texas, San Antonio, have determined that infant mortality is higher in counties with larger fundamentalist Protestant Christians when compared to counties with more mainline Protestants and Roman Catholics. The researchers theorized in the Journal for the Scientific Study of Religion that conservative religions enforce norms related to the rejection of education and science that may create social environments in which prenatal care or other health-related resources are more restricted. They also suggested that fundamentalist Christianity, in its promotion of early childbearing and discouragement of birth control, may also contribute to the higher infant death rate.
I'm
yes,
kinda
Josh?
Confused because Roman Catholics, a lot of Roman Catholics also discourage use of birth control.
Yes, but the marriage rate for Roman Catholics, it tends to be a higher onset of when you get married. So, yeah, the Pope says that condoms are bad and that birth control is not cool. But, hey, Italy is a Catholic country and their birth rate is only 1.8. So there's got to be enough. See, remember, people are better than their books, whatever the dogma says.
Very true. Right.
Do what's healthy and good for you. But, it wouldn't be a day of Ask an Atheist without talking about some dead babies. But here's the thing. They don't have these children in some of these fundamentalist Protestant, evangelical communities don't have the benefit of the child up in Canada where they're brought to court and removed because the lack of medical care and the exposure to violence, even if it's religiously motivated, you know, is a threat. And in this case, we're looking at infant mortality. This is, under 1 year old when babies die.
Yeah, especially like in Idaho, people are willing to overlook infant mortality for the sake of a religious rite.
It's something that different long-form journalism and some podcasts have gone into and some books about Idaho and the hyper-religious communities that can exist out in rural Idaho. You've had people fleeing from Eastern Oregon into Idaho when Oregon really tightened up their child protection laws, that you can't harm your child based on your religious convictions. It might seem like, oh, well, Idaho, it's so rural, there's nothing out there. But we did find that the researchers looked at what was already correlated with high infant mortality. For instance, if you live in the South, there's higher infant mortality in the South than there is in what they determined to be the non-South. Now, I'm not sure which states that actually includes, but they said South versus non-South. We know that infant mortality is correlated with race. Black and African-American women in the United States have higher infant mortality than non-Black women. And poverty. We know that poverty, access to adequate health care, that's a factor in infant mortality. The researchers said they controlled for all of that and still found that counties with high fundamentalist communities had infant mortality rates that were higher. And, you can say on one hand, like, I as an atheist, that's my personal belief. I'm really pro-pluralism, right? I think separation of church and state protects all of us, those who are into religion, those who are not, and you can do a little bit of live and let live.
Live and let die in this case?
Yeah, in this case, this is what it's looking like.
It feels like it.
So I think that it's really important as we look at trying to say, well, let's embrace all, people's faiths. Yes, certainly the right to your own, religious belief is there and it's enshrined in our Constitution, but not at the expense of harming babies, not at the expense of harming individuals.
I'm not sure where these fundamentalist Christians are getting their directives from that they can't provide adequate medical care. Like, where in the Bible does it actually prevent them from?
Well, the Bible never mentions bilirubin, so therefore it doesn't exist. And why would we need an infant test for it?
I just don't. I honestly don't understand. Where in the Bible does it say that?
Wherever you want it.
Where I think that's the case. It's wherever that preacher wants it to say it. So, well, guys, this is a little bit of a downer. So to cleanse our palate a little bit, we got one more question. This is from Megan from Texas. She's one of our listeners and frequent commenters. And she asks, who's your favorite visual artist? Meredith? What kind of art are you into?
I've been really getting into following people that work with ceramics. I follow a lot of ceramics artists on Instagram. That's what I've been getting into. There's this girl up in Seattle named Katie Marks that makes really pretty sparkly shiny things with kitties and unicorns on them.
Nice.
But I've been following her account and got into some other guys up on San Juan that make really cool layered cups and stuff with their ceramics. It's fascinating.
Josh?
I'm not one for visual arts. I mean, I play video games and I find those visually stimulating, but I really don't have a taste for any kind of art.
No album covers that you find particularly formative? You didn't have that, you know, sort of like a age 17 poster up on your wall or anything like that?
No, I was too poor to be able to buy posters, so it's not a very...
I think video games could count as like a visual art. It's an art medium.
It definitely.
You think about like the gameplay and the style of the art.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I just don't know any of the artists. I don't ever pay attention to actually who's... Maybe like the closest thing would probably be like comic books, like if you, any kind of like Frank Miller or...
Okay, nice, nice. I think as far as visual arts, the artists themselves are not something that I did a huge study in, but I remember the first time that I really went to like a big art gallery and art museum, like in sort of this semi-adult awareness, I was on a school-sponsored trip, and we were in Spain, and we went to the Prado Museum, which is like the big art museum. It's sort of like the Met in New York or the Louvre in France. And I saw Goya for the first time and read into his life and how freaky he was and how his art changed, and it was fascinating.
Yeah.
And so I think that one of the fun things behind... looking at a visual artist is what are the things that influences their life. So if you're an atheist or humanist and you want to, you know, write into us, tell us that, hey, not all atheists and humanists, you know, hate art. We're not all flat affect people that enjoy nothing in the world.
But there's nothing wrong with us that are.
Yes, that's fine too. Not all of us are like that. Some of us are, and it's all good. Then you can email us at questions@atheist.radio. Tweet us at AskAnAtheistWA. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/AskAnAtheistWA. And our music is by Chris Coleman and Phil Whitfield, as usual. Thank you, Meredith, for being in the studio.
Thanks, Becky.
Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
We'll see you guys next week.